A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Hello, Arrow Squad. Welcome to episode 162, season 7, number 17, titled Inheritance. This is Martin the Flash.
And this is Cammy, and we are here for the last episode before hiatus, Martin.
Yeah.
Are you crying alongside?
Well, it was a surprise, wasn't it? Because we reported a few episodes ago that we're going straight through to the finish this time. And sure enough, they threw a hiatus right in the middle.
Yeah, I know I'm kind of jumping the gun when it comes to news. But I was sad to know that. I don't know exactly when that was announced. I think I had heard a few weeks ago, like we said, that we were going to go straight through without a break. But we are going into a three-week hiatus. So it's just a miniature one, but it's kind of hard at this point. You know, we just started building up pacing towards the finale to have such a break. But Flash and I will find some fun stuff to chat about on the Facebook page in the meantime over hiatus. And of course, we still have this one episode to talk about today as well.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think the whole DC universe is taking a break because Flash is gone for a month and Arrow's gone for 3 weeks. But for those fans of Legends of Tomorrow, join me over on Tomorrow's Legends because we come back next week. So you'll get 3 weeks of Legends while everyone else is just sitting around. So come join me and Jess over there.
Well, there you go. There's your antidote for hiatus.
Yeah. The other thing, we just want to remind all of you fabulous feedbackers about our special feedback episode that we want to put together towards the end of the show. Just want to keep that in your ears so that we get some really, really heartfelt emotional stuff to help bring this show to a close. And then another thing we wanted to bring up, me and Cammy were talking about it off air here, that it's been a while since we've mentioned about superhero names. There's a lot of feedbackers, a lot of us that all have superhero names, and there's still a bunch of you that are still using your regular names. And we just thought it'd be fun to revisit that it's been a long-standing tradition on Arrow Squad right from the beginning that feedbackers can get a superhero name we can call them by. So if you're into that and you want some help, then let us know and we'll kind of finish out the season with everybody having a cool superhero name if you want.
Yeah, and also just in a more general sense, if you're ever sending in feedback or emailing any feedback to me or whatever, and you want me to just use your first name rather than first and last name, or call me, call you by a nickname or anything like that, I'm happy to do so. Here on Arrow Squad, of course, we default to superhero names, but just in general, just let us know what you would like to be called, and we're happy to do so.
Yeah, I don't know when my identity got given away, because I used to just be the Flash all the time, and now it's always Martin the Flash. I don't know when that happened, but now everybody knows. I guess it's just following the TV show because Barry tells everybody he's the Flash these days. So,
yeah. I think I hosted one or two episodes before I actually had my superhero name, Cammy the Chameleon. Sometimes it takes a while to kind of find the right fit.
True. Well, let's get to this episode number 17 where I was hoping it was going to be a good one. We got some feelings here, I think, don't we?
We do. I had high hopes for you. I, behind the scenes, messaged the Flash right after the episode, and I was saying I hoped he enjoyed it because I knew 17 was his lucky number. Now, did it live up to its lucky status for you?
Well, I'm mixed on it.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 7. Predictable story arcs that were still fun. So My feelings are mixed because it's not a bad and good mix, but more like size of frustration followed by, oh, wait, that was actually still pretty fun to watch, if that kind of makes sense. Can you be frustrated with something but still enjoy it? And So what, there wasn't anything bad about this episode. I just found it so predictable. So let me get into it, because I got a lot to say here, which might hit on some of our points later in the notes, but I just got a lot I want to say in my opening spiel here. So where the episode lost it for me was in how predictable it was. I knew within the opening couple minutes of flashbacks to Emiko's story that she was going to betray Oliver and was fooling him all along. It just, there was hints to it all along, and I just picked up right on and said, ah, she's going to fool him. Okay, so that reveal is going to happen, and I already know about it. And then shortly after we started seeing Dante helping her with the training and giving her information and everything, something in my head just sparked that she's going to be the one that sinks the boat. I'm not entirely sure what gave it away. It was just tidbits of info that Dante was saying and the reactions that she was given, the way she was showing her emotion towards what he was trying to tell her. I just saw it coming a mile away, which made the big reveal really underwhelming at the end. That had no shock value for me. Now, in saying that, it didn't make me hate the episode, because I found that I was still enjoying how it all played out. It's just that there was not the, oh, what kind of moment, which I think is what they really wanted. Now, I know there's tons of chatter online all over the place that, wait a second, it was originally Malcolm Merlyn that supposedly sunk the ship. I know all about it. I looked into the history of it all, but if you dig into the backstory, even from the comics, Malcolm Merlyn was also a member of the Ninth Circle. So this is my thought process here to counter all of that, you know, Arrow rewrote their story. What's going on? Maybe Malcolm and Emiko worked together. Maybe it was a mission they did as a way to impress the leaders of the Ninth Circle or work their way up their ranks. Or maybe Malcolm being older was kind of like her handler back then, because she would have been pretty darn young. She's young right now, a little bit younger than Oliver, I would say. So she would have been really young back then. And maybe Malcolm was there to ensure she accomplished the mission, because this was her way of proving her loyalty and allegiance to the Ninth Circle by killing off family members. So I think there's plenty of room for it all to work and make sense. I just don't want to hear any more of the hate and the screams of foul play with rewriting Arrow's history, because they probably didn't. We just don't have all the details surrounding that historical moment. So I thought it was just fun that they revisited it. Now, the other thing I want to take points away from this episode, though, is the change in rank between Dante and Emiko that came suddenly with no explanation. That's the part that's sticking with me as the most poor writing on this episode, and a poor decision, I think, that they did that. They've been nicely setting up Dante as the true big bad for the rest of the season, and it was a very successful storyline they were going along with. It was believable, and just a really good course to take, I think, for the show, because he was so much better than Diaz ever was. I found him to be intriguing, intimidating, and not someone to mess with. And Diaz never quite attained any of that, even though I tried so hard to think he would. Dante was fearsome. He had that whole notorious evil leader vibe, kind of like a kingpin feeling. And I hope they were really going to develop that into showing us more and leading into him being the leader of the Ninth Circle. I mean, he trained Emiko. He commanded her. He was the boss. Then suddenly, without any transition at all, she's suddenly threatening him and taking charge. Massive capitalized WTF. There was no transition, no hint or clue. There was something different there. And Dante just becomes all of a sudden submissive after handing down the Ninth Circle law on everyone just moments before. Now he's suddenly submissive to her and acting like a scared little wimp. It was not believable for a second. And even the performance of Emiko fell way short of being any type of leader or someone to fear in that moment. To me, she's a henchman at most. Highly skilled, kind of like the right-hand woman type of henchman. Like she was the strong arm of Dante. Because for me, guess what? I mean, we haven't seen enough of her for long enough to believe she ever rose high enough in the ranks to take over. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Look at how she's been living in her own hideout, training, working alone, working with Renee, not always being successful in her missions, acting like a brat. It's just too much to accept that was all an act just to get close to Oliver. Not the act of a leader of the Ninth Circle, because to me, a leader like that, of an organization like that, would have all of their servants doing the work. Anyway, my point being, that to me was the worst writing I've seen this season. That transition just was out of nowhere, with no connection and no believability, and it falls so short of being any type of wow moment that they were expecting to get. What I will say, though, that I liked about all this going down is that it ties all the way back to the start of the show, bringing our story full circle. And that's a nice complete feeling as we start the path towards the end. Now, I'll have a little bit more to say about it later, but there was a lot of fun still happening this episode. You know, Felicity hiring her friend Alina to help build the company up. That was a fun sequence. You could tell they were just having a ball with that. Oliver really truly doing Green Arrow type action. Those fight scenes with the team were beautiful, good old Arrow action that never fails to deliver. So for me, a lot of that countered what I was feeling let down with the other stuff I just ranted about, which kind of landed this episode square on an average for me. And a good average is 7 for this season. So there we go. Opening monologue rant over.
Yeah, that was a very good summary, I would say, of the episode. My rating's not too far off from yours. It sounds like our ratings are getting closer and closer as these episodes go on. I'm giving this a 6.5 out of 10, so a bit lower than you. Mm-hmm. A lot of your cons I have as well, and I'm going to save most of that for our discussion. But I will say, in terms of my episode summary, the main issue with this episode is that there's too many stories and not enough time for each. So the pacing was off. And in terms of what they were doing to invest in stories on screen, I'm really uncertain that the investment in Emiko's story is paying off at this point. They're investing quite a lot of time in her. So an example would be the backstory in her that just may not be smart, if anything, from a business sense, because she's not getting a spinoff and we have 15 episodes left of this show.
Yeah.
I would say that the reveal of the Ninth Circle setup was actually good. I would say that's close to being a highlight in this episode. And the true highlight in this episode for me is the continuous buildup of the Archer program. That's the part that does have payoff, is a good investment, and is a consistently engaging part of this season. But overall, it was the pacing and the investment in Emiko's story that I think is to blame for this getting the lowest rating from both of us for a while. But yeah, we will have much more time to discuss that in our discussion points.
Yeah, I just needed to blow off some steam there, because it's not ticked off, angry at the show steam. It's I was hoping for so much more, and what they revealed, expecting it to be a shocking reveal, was not at all for me. And I, like I said, the transition from Dante being the head to her being the head was just, it was so poorly done. There was absolutely no substance there to even see it coming, to even make it believable. And we'll get into it more. It just was so, it almost felt icky the way they did it. I was uncomfortable, like, ugh. To see Dante being such a badass for the last few times we see him, and especially in this episode, and such a huge leader in charge, and like I said, kingpin-like, someone we're going to have to be concerned with for a long time. To see him suddenly crumble and be like, oh yeah, I hope I did all right there, leader. Oh my, like it made me uncomfortable to see him behave like that, and I couldn't accept it.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, last week's episode was a particularly interesting one to lead up into this, and we did get some pre-show feedback as well. We got, of course, our usual post, comment on our blog post from our friend Aaron, and we also got some feedback this week as pre-show feedback from Comic Geek Kev.
Yeah, that so, one actually, awesome. it came in late. I think we got it like a day or two after the show got out last week. So yeah, that's why it's included in pre-show.
Yeah. It's based on last week's episode. He's just noting that he was a little behind in feedback because he didn't do the live viewing. Yeah. But we can start with Aaron's feedback this week.
Take her away.
Sure. So she says, of course, she starts off her post of "Keep Black Siren Evil," which makes me wonder if she watched the promo for next week. And she leads after that with a question of where Black Siren is in the future, which I think is an interesting one because that is one of the characters we don't see in the future. She is super excited, of course, to see Nyssa in the Flash Forward episode, as Nyssa is one of her absolute favorite characters. And she says specifically to you, Flash, please tell the Legends of Tomorrow writers to use her when you can. She's available. You just have to do it. She says she's bitter that Legends doesn't use Nyssa more.
Yeah.
And to me, she says she really enjoyed my note about who on pseudo Team Arrow is trustworthy. Renee not being trustworthy, Dinah may or may not, but since she trusts Renee, she can't have that information. She appreciated that and noted that Felicity is the bacon of the team, as it improves practically everything. She's excited for Batwoman coming out of the crossover. And she wouldn't say Batwoman is Arrow specific. She just came out of the crossover. And she goes through a few things that she puts on her bitter list, which reminded me of some of our little rants that we have here. We have the little salty Cammy corner, and you've got your Flash rants from time to time, although usually you keep a little bit more of a level head than I do, I suppose. She has some theories here about what may have happened with Thea and Roy, tied to some of the speculation that you had in particular on what might be motivating Roy through this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she says the 20 years forward comes from we noted that the flash forwards are 20 years in the future. She said that comes from a newspaper title that Nora showed Barry on the Flash. That's kind of why we didn't necessarily have the clear definition on the Arrow side.
Right.
She also just ends with a note about the edited Arrow at the end for the title shot. She thought that was cool. So thank you, Aaron.
Yeah. And the thing she says, like, I am so with you, Aaron, on your love for Nyssa. It's just, Nyssa is so hardcore, so serious. There's such a depth to her and the darkness and the seriousness that revolved around her story on Arrow. As much as I would love to see her on Legends, due to the fact of her and Sarah's history, she just wouldn't fit because Legends is such a light, goofy, and often stupid type of show that Nyssa is too good for it. She's too serious, and I don't think she would fit in as much as I would love to see her there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I don't keep up with Legends regularly, but I do know that Nyssa does feel like such a quintessential Arrow character, even though she stems from Ra's al Ghul, who could be, you know, I mean, some people liked him as an Arrow villain. Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily topping everybody's list, but he's there, right?
Yeah.
But Nyssa was so fabulously integrated into the Arrow DNA, as well as Talia, that both of them, it's almost hard to picture them on another show. Like, the thought of Nyssa on The Flash, for example, seems almost silly. And I'm not familiar enough with Legends to know whether she would fit their tone. But I do know that what Aaron's getting after is really that connection that we had between Nyssa and Sarah.
Yep.
Which was so well introduced at the start. And the two of them have fantastic chemistry. I think they have one of the more charming romances that's even come out of Arrow, to be honest. So any platform that could have both of them together, I think, would satisfy both Aaron and myself.
What I'd like to know is if there's anyone out there that knows if Katie Lotz has ever been approached with that question about, why do you miss Nyssa? Would you like to have another scene with her on one of these shows? Like, I wonder if anyone's ever asked her that, where she's given a definitive answer as towards how she feels about that storyline, that history with Nyssa. Because I don't know of anything that she's ever spoke about it. So I'd love to see if there is something out there for that.
Yeah. That's a good question. I suspect Aaron has the answer for you.
Possibly. Well, thank you, Aaron. I'll just read this one from Comic Geek Kev that came in a little bit late last week, and he says, I know I'm behind in feedback since I couldn't watch the live viewing, but I just had a couple things I wanted to say about this all flash forward episode. Arrow once again proves it has the best fight choreography in TV. That Mia scene at the party was amazing. Future William is great. If they do decide to do some kind of spinoff with these characters, I would be all in. Futurelicity seem to be more subtly aged than they have done with Dinah and Roy. Do we know how old these characters are currently compared to each other? Dinah might be older as she seems to have had a decently long career with law enforcement. Not important, just curious. Yeah, I would say Dinah's probably the oldest member on the team, even a few years older than Oliver for sure. I would say Dinah, Oliver, Roy, Felicity, Thea, like trying to go down the line in age. I guess Renee would be in there with Roy as well.
Yeah. Renee's age, I've had a hard time guessing because I know the actor is a bit older than he looks. Mm-hmm. But Renee has a kid who's, you know, in high school now. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he's a few years younger than Oliver. You know what? Renee's probably older than Felicity, but younger than Oliver. But definitely yeah. Dinah's the oldest on the team, I would say.
I agree.
He continues, I really like Connor, although he's been in other episodes. He probably had more to do here than in all the others combined. Yeah, I'm with you there, Kev. Finally, the reaction of Felicity when she realizes Arrow has gone live was great. Oh, I think he means Archer. It also seems obvious that Archer has some part in what happened to Star City. Felicity seems to blame herself, and the way the episode ends definitely suggests Archer is the catalyst. Another great episode. I give it 9 out of 10. Felicity in combat boots. Until next time. Awesome, Kev. Well, I'm just glad we got that in. You're able to catch up with us. I believe we'll hear from you at the end of this episode as well.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our favorite moments, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Okay. I have an unusual sound clip this week, as it isn't so much a dialogue scene, but more just a kick-ass scene that highlights why Oliver is a superhero and has skills unmatched by anyone else. And that's the scene when the drones were put into motion and about to fly off to drop their gas bombs. We see Oliver pull out explosive arrows and rapid fire at the moving targets. Holy moves that Flash himself would be proud of. Did you see how quick he could draw, knock, and fire those arrows, all the while being bang on in his accuracy? That was really cool. It made him look cool. We haven't seen that kind of spotlight on Oliver and his abilities and what makes him stand out from all the other archers in a long, long time. And it made me very happy and very proud of our leader. So the clip is just that there's a little bit of lines by Felicity in here, but mostly it's the sound effects of him shooting. Just listen to how fast he's pulling those arrows. It's such a cool effect. I wanted to play it here.
Bad news, guys. Those drones are airborne, which means you need to incinerate them midair, or else that's a lot of sarin gas raining down on the city.
Overwatch, it would be very helpful if I could see them.
I am working on decloaking them now. Come in.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear how fast that was?
Yeah, that was, and it was really nice integration of the special effects sounds, the action sounds of boots on the ground, Felicity's voice guiding the team, the music. It was a really well-layered moment.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, it really highlights Oliver as the Green Arrow, what makes him stand apart, what makes him a hero, because the speed that he can shoot that bow and arrow and be accurate in a moving target situation, that there's nobody in the world that can do that. So it was just cool. It was a really cool moment for him, and I was quite happy for him to get that again. We haven't seen it in a while.
Mm-hmm. My favorite moment is quite a contrast to yours because it's a much lighter, less serious, just charming bit. So we see a good balance in my clip. It's just narrative. with Team Arrow's intensity and humor represented. All the members of this conversation, they're being serious and discussing murder, as one does. But we also have the Arrow-esque quips and humor. And I know those of you listening to this, you can't see the scene as well. But there's just such a charming camaraderie as well when you watch it, of their body language and how they respond and their facial reactions and nose crinkles and stuff. It's so cute. And after all, it is just Dragon who died. So it's not that bad. It's just cute. The pace builds well, and it's a nice example of our team being back together, and here it is.
And you know what? I will not fail you this time. I think I have the exact clip you were looking for. Here it is.
Okay, well, how did you run into Dante last night, Oliver, and why didn't you call for backup?
Laurel came to speak with you and found me, suggested that Emiko has been hiding certain parts of her past. And said that she killed Diaz.
She killed Diaz.
Which doesn't mean she's bad.
I followed Emiko, and it led me to Dante.
Okay, all we really know about Emiko is what she's told us, which isn't much.
She's a vigilante. For all we know, she's gathering intel on the Nine Circle to take them down.
Also, why are we taking Laurel's word about anything?
Hey, Laurel has changed a lot. I mean, she's been a really good friend to me. Not to say that your sister's evil, but she's changed a lot.
Be that as it may, the Ninth Circle is clearly a threat. And we need to follow up every lead that we have.
Well, we know that they stole 8 military-grade drones, which they could literally be planning to do anything with.
There you go.
It's just so fun to hear their pacing back and forth. They have such quick answers. There's no awkward pauses. They really are so believably a team familiar with each other.
Yeah, a well-oiled machine. No, it's a fun scene. It is Felicity with her little... Her little quip there about Diaz. Well, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, she was. It was fun seeing her defend both Emiko and Laurel in that little bit as well. It's interesting the perspective she takes, but we can get further in that in our discussion points.
All right, where are you starting us off with this time?
Well, we are starting off with our discussion of Team Arrow, because while we did have some interesting things on the villainy front, I think our heroes still kept kind of center stage here. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of moving pieces in this episode. The team is somewhat back together, as we just discussed, but they're off working in pairs quite a bit in this episode. What did you think of the current team dynamic and their balance between some harmony and some conflict?
Yeah, I think they're still figuring themselves out in this new situation, since now they're allowed to work as a team again under the law and everything's good. So I think they're still trying to figure themselves out while pulling on their old experience together as well. Plus, they've gotten past a lot of huge issues with each other. So there's a lot going on that they have to find the new smooth path together with each other on. And I don't really see it as having a lot of conflict, really. It's just a bit of uncomfortableness as they're weaving their way through all these pieces to get back on track, or working out some of the rust, I guess you could say. I mean, you look at how well they work together in the field and how well they work together when they're making their plans. Like, not once, but twice or even three times this episode, they were in the Arrow bunker forming a plan together. And they, like you just said, they all worked so well together, like in your favorite scene. It went really smoothly, I thought. So for me, it's just nice having a team again. And especially when they go out in the field and they're all in their hero suits. It's just fun to see, because that's what we all come to superhero TV for. We want to see our superheroes fighting crime. And we got that again as a team. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. I think that their dynamic is believable right now. We still have the conflict infused based on the fact that some of them don't necessarily have the same moral stance and not the same approach to heroism, but they're still trying to work together. Yeah. And for over 50% of them, I would say it is working. But there are still some key sources of conflict. And in this episode, one of those sources, possibly the main one, is the addition of Laurel and this, or Black Siren, I guess we can still call her. And this episode centers on her a bit. So my question for you, Flash, is, are you currently siding with the anti-Siren folks or the pro-Siren folks, or neither, or both?
Part of me is hanging on to hope that she still turns, but that's a very thin thread that I'm hanging on at that. But this episode tells me she's going to be quote-unquote crying soon with how Emiko was egging her on, and that thug they had in custody that riled her up about Quentin. I see her losing her cool soon. I can see that now. Whether it's turning back to a vigilante and joining the team, or going all dark and bad again, you know, bringing Siren back, something's going to make her crack. Mark my words, she's going to be busting out the canary cry soon enough. Another thing I wanted to just point out here is that I did like seeing Oliver and her having a really strong scene together here. Even though they were kind of arguing or at odds with each other a bit, it was a nice callback to the old days with how many scenes we used to get of those two. I really liked it.
Yeah, I thought that their scene was fun. The introduction where she essentially walks in, sees that Felicity's not there, and was like, well, I'm leaving. I found that really funny. And then Oliver's sort of saying, okay, you know, we'll patch up your injury or whatever. And Siren stays to do so, but patches it up herself. I find her aversion to Oliver to be fantastic. Yeah. And exactly what I had wished the actual Laurel back in season one would have been allowed to have. Because I think that having that as a critical character trait within or around the team would have been fantastic. So keep Black Siren evil. I'm fine with that.
But if
she does need to be good, I think that one of her most redeeming character traits is her aversion to Oliver.
Yeah, and just remember that I don't see trailers, I don't see previews for next week's episode, and I've heard the chatter about what might come next week, and I'm trying to plug my ears. Everything that I'm saying here is based on what I'm thinking. I have no inclination, no idea of spoilers at all what's coming. So this is my own predictions.
Flash, I have no idea what you're talking about. There's a trailer for next week. There's spoilers going around.
I've never heard such a thing.
Well, quickly moving away from that topic then, we do also see Team Arrow bolster its tech up a bit, specifically with Felicity and Elena and the development of the Archer program, which is still in its infancy stages. But do you have any predictions of where that story might go? I know we've talked about how that will tie to the future.
Well, we see this episode how easy it was to shut it down, which to me was surprising. I mean, all Emiko did was walk into the Arrow Cave and throw like a little keychain and shut the whole system down. And that surprised me because we know Felicity and her tech skills. And it made me wonder, does the Ninth Circle have a tech division of their own? And is it on par with Felicity, like able to keep up with her? It is weird. It surprised me that it was that easy to shut down. Now I'm thinking having Elena helping Felicity is going to help grow Smoke Tech rapidly and grow the Archer program rapidly and turn it into something. But I'm betting that's going to be either a side arc leading to the future storyline, that the Ninth Circle wants the tech and will fight for it. So that could be also the rest of this season's story, now that I think about it. So it could go either way. It could just be a side story that we keep seeing every once in a while, Felicity and Elena building it, or it becomes the main story point based on how Emiko really expressed that she wants to get her hands on it.
Yeah, I know that they're trying to communicate with this program that it is in its infancy and show its weaknesses and all those kinks being worked out and how it develops from the ground up as a security system, becomes this gigantic thing, right, that can do everything. So I understand that's why it can be shut down so quickly, but it was kind of surprising, and it felt sort of not in keeping with the level of power they've given the team's tech before, but still interesting. I definitely understand why the Ninth Circle would want the tech, particularly if it depends on how much they're aware of Felicity's skills, previous pieces of tech she's created before, or pieces of tech that's just come out of Team Arrow back when Curtis was there as well, and how highly they value that. So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, and I know we're going to talk about Ninth Circle in a couple minutes here. When I looked up some, because I don't know a lot about them, and when I looked up some history on them, I mean, they're basically being described as a secret society that's been around for so many years, and they're basically made up of corrupt bankers and politicians and people of that sort that use their money and their power to do evil things. And, you know, basically like people like Dante and all that, they're basically their hired guns to go do all the dirty work. But the organization is run by these banker type people. So yeah, they would want tech like that, because could you imagine what they could do with that kind of tech to go into their systems that they already have had in place for so many years? Like it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now while we're still on the heroes, I had a couple points I wanted to bring up here and see what you thought of it. I liked in the beginning, going all the way back to the beginning of the episode, I loved seeing Oliver and Emiko training together, because I have to say, their skill was very equal, and we haven't seen Oliver have that opportunity for a long time to get to train with someone that's on par with him, allowing them to really go at it. I mean, they were not holding back. It was full on practice, you know, wooden sword fighting. It was really cool to see, and I just thought it was a neat thing for Oliver to get to do that again, to full on train with someone that's of equal caliber to him.
Yeah, I thought that was a fun scene, and it was a nice lead up into what eventually became an episode where we did see Oliver out in the field fighting as the version of the Green Arrow that we'd like to see, right? Mm-hmm. The training that he did with Emiko was nice, because we could see how similar their fighting styles are, even though they've gone through different training origins.
Right.
And it obviously foreshadows the fact that they're going to continue to oppose each other throughout the episode. So, yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. Now, the other point I wanted to make, though, is that it was also good to see Diggle being suspicious of Emiko in that scene where he pulled Oliver aside after they just arranged their plans. He said, "Oliver, be cautious around her, be careful with her." And Oliver's like, "Yeah, okay." I liked that, because it was very similar, very reminiscent of when Oliver was suspicious of Diggle's brother, because Oliver suspected something of his brother's behavior and Diggle wouldn't listen. And, you know, it took a long time for him it took a lot of crap happening for him to realize it, but Diggle wouldn't listen to him. So now the tables have been turned, and it allows both Oliver and Diggle to work through this problem together because of that past experience. And I just like that. I liked seeing the tables turn like that, and, you know, Diggle's standing up for his brother in arms still.
Yeah, it's just good instincts for Diggle as well. It shows the protectiveness that he has. And as the team's just recently reconciled, and there was obviously the issue of Diggle for a while, they're not protecting and supporting the team, which we like to forget, because frankly, that just wasn't Diggle. But now we get to see Diggle being himself and being protective and smart one.
Did you see the connection to the past story with Diggle and his brother? It's very, so similar to this one.
Yeah, it's a good chance to tie back to history that you can really only tie back to when you do have characters that have been around that long. And Diggle's one of the few ones left still alive.
Yeah, it's so true.
A great opportunity. Yeah. Well, let's chat a bit about villains, because the line becomes a bit blurred, of course, between heroes and villains here. We've already brought up Emiko a little bit, and then we find out throughout this episode, not that it's a huge shock, because they've been talking about her villainy ways for the past couple, that she is working quite closely with Dante. And because of her backstory, we get a bit of a closer look into why she is doing so. So we've touched on this a bit, and I think I know where you stand with this, but what did you think of specifically her backstory and setup in this episode?
Yeah, I got a little more to add to it. I mean, at first, it was nice to see more of her development. I mean, going all the way back to when she was just a young kid, especially when we got to see Robert show up. I mean, it was great they got to pull that actor back in for a few small moments in this episode. It's always cool for a connection to the past like that. I mean, those scenes, they give a lot more depth to the emotion of the past, and it shows us exactly why she turns to Dante. I mean, as an 11-year-old, and then later as a young adult, she was let down and walked out on by Robert twice, which would cause irreversible damage to her emotional psyche, and there is really is no saving her. 11-year-old girl, and then a later, you know, a later teens, maybe early 20s, I'm not sure. When your dad walks out on you in the way that he did and doesn't support you and leaves you and your mom hanging for fighting to survive, that can do something to any kid's psyche, girl or guy. It doesn't matter. That'll mess a kid up. So I'm starting to understand why there was no saving her, which is why I saw the end coming. That's what gave it away for me. But as I said, it only leads to her, for me, being the right hand for Dante, because I just don't think there was enough to see it lead to her running the whole show. I think she's too young. If you know the story about the Ninth Circle, like I just explained about it being a secret society, it's and being led by old bankers and the such like that, that use money behind the scenes to gain more power, Emiko just doesn't fit the ideal there to be leading that type of society. She's a member doing the dirty work. And I like I said, I think she's too young. Like, how does someone of her age, like I'm guessing she's in her mid-20s maybe, rise up through the ranks to lead a secret society that's been around for decades? I'm not even sure how long it's been around. If it's been around for 100 years, secret societies are usually, you know, very, very long-lived. How does she rise up the ranks to lead such a thing when it's led by the type of bankers and politicians and all the corruption behind the scenes? It makes no sense to me. And coming back to Dante, I thought he was such a badass here before it all changed. I mean, that scene when he pulled those guns out on Diggle, it came out so fast, so matter-of-factly. He didn't care about anything. He sees what's going on. He pulls the guns. He's taking these guys down. There's no hesitation. There's nothing. And that to me is such a true bad guy. He's a great villain. And it makes me feel like it's so unfortunate that they just basically neutered him the way they did in this episode.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between. I was not necessarily super impressed with Dante, but it was all so, overtly clear that they were just going to set up Dante to be this big, intimidating, whatever we were supposed to buy into him. And then we were supposed to use that to become then further impressed by Emiko running him, right?
Yeah.
It was very overt. That's okay. It's a superhero show. What I'm kind of questioning is whether all this investment in Emiko either is the big bad, or, you know, she'll turn around in the end and come around to Oliver's side and it'll be this, you know, true redemption story. I don't know, whatever. Regardless, I don't think the investment in her storyline is just at the right time or place in this show. It's nothing against the actor. Nothing against really the writing, quite frankly. There's been some missteps, but there's missteps throughout this show and any show, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's really just the wrong time and place. There's 15 episodes left of the show. This is not the time to introduce a new queen family member and turn them into a villain. And it's kind of rehashing a lot of stories that line up way too closely with Thea's. So I understand the thought process behind it. I don't think this was the right time to execute it. And the execution is only so-so. Again, the actress is doing a great job. The writing, the micro writing, the actual narrative back and forth between her and the other characters is fine. I think she actually has a pretty clear voice. The macro writing, I think the bigger issue is not so much that, you know, the unrealism, the lack of realism of having her as a, you know, early 20s character be the leader of this grand circle. Because, you know, of course, that's the premise of many young adult novels and comic books, and you know, some 16-year-old takes over the international super league of whatever, that, you know, that's super common. I just don't think this was the time or place to be doing that on Arrow. That's all I really have on it. I don't disagree with you at all. I just, for me, it was just the greater issue of whether, you know, my next question was whether she was going to reconcile the team or stay a formidable villain, regardless of what the answer to that really is. Although I am curious what your answer to that is. I don't know that this is the story for the last full season of Arrow that we'll ever get. But with that said, do answer that question, because I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I probably 90% of it I agree with. I like Emiko. I like the actress playing her. I was hoping for a lot revolved around her. And I, like I just said, with that scene with Oliver and her training, I loved it. I love seeing her in the field. I love seeing a equal to Oliver, a female archer, his equal in almost every way, is pretty darn cool. The part that I didn't like is when they switched her to be the leader. I didn't find her performance believable, that she was, I can't think of another term, but I didn't think she was badass enough to suddenly overturn Dante and be in command of him in such a way that he turned into a whimpering little, you know, sniveling child. I did not like that switch. It wasn't believable at all. And to go along with what you're saying, where you're saying the timing of this doesn't fit in, and I truly think that's because they didn't give us enough time with her. If we got an entire half a season working on her and building her up, then it might have been a little more believable to see her take over the Ninth Circle and stuff. But to just land it in our laps that, oh, hey, she's been the leader all along, when we haven't even seen much about her, that's what makes it not believable. Now, to answer your question, I don't have any expectations at all for her to reconcile or anything like that. I believe she is the villain now, just as she is in the comics. I think that they're going to be figuring out, you know, I think that she's going to be who they're fighting from here on out for the rest of this season. She will now be the bad guy, the big bad. And whether it comes to her being redeemed at the end, I think we've got enough redemption stories this season and last season. I'm kind of done with redemption stories.
4.5 too many redemption stories.
Yeah, so let's just have someone stay evil once and for all, and that would be a much more emotional pull, I think, for me, for Oliver to try and try and try to save her, and she basically says, no, I am not, like, you know, like, screw you, I'm not turning to your side, and it's an emotional gut punch for Oliver that he cannot save another sister that he thought he could connect with. Mm-hmm. That to me would be emotionally stronger than him getting to save her and it's all happy in the end. No, we've got enough of that.
You can see how that's a storyline that could have gone to Siren easily and was wasted, where we didn't even have to go this whole route with Emiko at all. The whole concept of the team trying to save someone and being unable to because they want to stay evil could have gone to Siren and would have carried a much greater punch, because it would not have been a technically new character. Just throwing that out there for the Keep Black Siren Evil folks. But in terms of the rest of the evil in this episode, I know we already discussed sort of our thoughts on Dante in depth, and I know how you feel about the introduction of the Ninth Circle and the Ninth Circle's leader. I'm pretty ambivalent to having Emiko as the leader. I wouldn't necessarily have a strong preference between her and Dante, but I think the premise of the Ninth Circle is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But my main last question tied to the villains for you, and there's some interesting feedback on this later in the episode. Do you think the season will end with the Ninth Circle being taken down, or do you think we'll have another hanging ending with the villains alive?
Well, I kind of answer with a question, like, doesn't it seem like the Night Circle is the next League of Assassins to deal with kind of thing. That's the feeling it's kind of given me. Only the Ninth Circle is maybe a little bigger and with more reach due to their corrupt bankers and financial backers and all that stuff. It's a lot more corporate than the League of Assassins ever was. The League of Assassins was just a bunch of ninjas following an old spiritual, you know, whatever kind of thing. These guys are much bigger. I mean, it's a secret society. They've got history. They've got power. They've got, you know, tons of corrupt money in there. And I think it's cool. I actually really like the idea of the Ninth Circle. It ties in real world bad guys that I think are more believable, more realistic ideas. Then, you know, it's harder for someone to accept in today's world, a group of ninjas running around causing bad things to happen in a city, where you could easily believe corrupt bankers and corrupt rich people pulling the strings on politics and stuff behind the scenes. You could easily believe that. So I think it could be enough to go through all the way to next season for Arrow. I mean, I think the Night Circle and this whole concept covers all of the angles. You've got personal dangers, you know, to each member of the team. You've got citywide dangers where they've got to, you know, save Star City or rebuild it or whatever. And it even has a little bit of global danger. And I know we didn't like the global crisis stuff in previous seasons, but this is being kept on a smaller scale where essentially we're dealing with them here in Star City, but we know the Ninth Circle is global because they're a secret society. They've got hands in people's pockets all around the world. So there's just that little hint of global danger, which could allow Team Arrow to travel a little bit to some cool locations and things we haven't seen in a long time. You know, if you call back to when we were dealing with the League of Assassins and Ra's al Ghul, we spent so much time over there across the world and stuff. So we could see a little bit of that, which I think would be cool. So I really like the Night Circle concept. I think it's something that could carry us all the way through this season for sure, and maybe into our last 10 episodes next season. Who knows?
Yeah, I suspect that we're going to have a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of this episode to set us up for the last season, because the last season is short and they won't really probably be starting from scratch with their villains. They'll be wrapping up the mini storylines that they consistently leave hanging every season.
Yeah, but that's a really strong point, actually, Cammy. For them to take the eighth season of only 10 episodes and introduce somebody new to kick the season off with, and then only have 10 episodes to deal with them when it's also interrupted by the big crossover event, that would be a really, really big mistake to make.
Yep. That's my stance exactly. So I think they will not do that because they will still be under the same creative control they have now, which despite some episodes like this, which are fundamentally, I want to be very clear, repercussions of choices made before this creative control, which forced Dragon and the Longbow Hunters to be in this season for an extended period of time, allowing current creative control to only have a few episodes with a new villain. Aside from that, the pacing this season and the writing this season has actually been pretty fantastic. So I have hope for these last 15 or so episodes where we get more of that creative control and less of these current rush storylines where we try to get a season-long villain into about half of a season, because we had half a season with the Longbow Hunters who were now conveniently pretending never existed, and I'm absolutely on board with that. But
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying I'm totally with you. Like, there's just because we're picking apart some of the things they maybe tripped up on here, or a bit of a slip up in this episode, it doesn't mean the episode was bad, and it doesn't mean the season is going to all fall to heck now. It's not. This season has been spectacular. This episode was still good in a lot of ways. There's just a couple of things they could have fleshed out better if this is what they had planned to do. And like you said, new showrunners didn't have a lot of time to fix the mistakes of previous showrunners. So there's a few hiccups that are going to happen while they try to figure their pathway to the end of the show. But by no means did I hate this episode. By no means does this mean Arrow is falling apart. It's not that bad at all. We're just really highlighting the things that, you know, they didn't necessarily nail the target in the bullseye this time.
Yeah, exactly. So the last little piece that we have to chat about is kind of the absence of something. We did not have flash forwards this episode because we had flashbacks in Emiko's story. Mm-hmm. And we do have some very clear indicators about what might be happening soon, which will tie to the future in this week's episode. We have clues dropped that Renee may go more anti-team. We see the further emergence of the Archer program's functionality. We see some rifts in the team currently, which we may be setting up for the more significant separations we see in the future. So just a general question, since we don't have any flash forwards, do you have any theories tied to the future of these storylines?
Well, like you just said, I think a lot of it's going to center around Renee, I think, as he decides to help the Glades. I mean, right now at this point in time, I'm not sure where he stands, because that whole Glade story or whole future line story, as we said, is 20 years from now. And he was here in our current timeline. Renee was part of Emiko's deception as well. He was also betrayed by her. So I don't see yet the connection as to how he ends up separate from the team. I think something else is going to have to happen to get that there, whether it's the destruction of Star City or what. Like, yes, there is some rough waters between them right now, but I don't see there being enough that's going to lead him down that path yet. Cause that, like I said, that's 20 years. So there's a lot more that's going to have to happen that probably sets him on that path. With the Archer program, somehow it's going to fall into the wrong hands. That's going to be the connecting story point, I think, between now and the future. Although we saw that Felicity in the future storyline, we saw that she was in like a jail cube, the glass cube thing. So maybe the Archer program being in the hands of the bad guys doesn't happen until, you know, maybe a couple months, couple weeks before the future storyline started with us. Maybe they just had her under duress and, you know, like they're threatening her family, they're threatening something. And that she gives them use of Archer in order to save her family, but not actually hack into it. Cause I find it hard to believe that anyone would best our Felicity Smoke in programming and get to the Archer program without her being able to stop them. Although going all the way back to me being surprised this episode that a little key ring can shut the whole program down, I would believe that because of that, she builds, along with Elena's help, some super massive security to stop that from ever happening again, which is why I find it hard to accept that maybe right now in this timeline, someone gets a hold of Archer, someone steals it from her and uses it to, you know, to do dastardly things. I have a feeling, this is thoughts coming to me right now. I have a feeling that all that stuff in the future just happened. They just get a hold of Archer program fairly recently in the future timeline.
Yeah, I think that what's going to happen with the Archer program is, you kind of started to touch on this, I suspect she's going to have to choose between the Archer program and her family. Mm-hmm. Or in a more general sense, between being a vigilante slash hero and her family. And she finds another way, as we know. She continues to dabble in vigilante behavior while also protecting her kids, but it comes at this sort of necessary fracture where she keeps Mia apart from the rest of the family, the rest of the team. It sounds like she's not able to be involved in William's upbringing, neither she nor Oliver. And at the point that we see them in the future, Oliver is separated and undercover in that wrestling gang or whatever the current theory is. I really liked Stormy's theory from last week. I went back and looked at that scene. It definitely looks like Oliver. So whatever's going on, the family fractures, the heroism is possibly still there, but they're not able to work as a team. And I suspect that Felicity has to make tough choices tied to that. It certainly wouldn't be a first for her. She's had to continuously make tough choices where she's had to choose the good of many over the good of the few loved ones around her, and I think she's made really admirable choices thus far, but if she has to do so again, as we know she does willingly give up her ability to publicly, you know, be a mother to me. And I don't know. It's admirable, but kind of heartbreaking. I'm sure we'll touch more on that in upcoming episodes when we return to having flash forwards. But I was just curious if you sort of missed having flash forwards this episode, because we did just come off an episode with a whole bunch of them, and then we go to none at all.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I'm not sure. I suppose after a full episode of being in the future timeline, that a break from it was nice. I don't know, because I liked where we were going in the future episodes, or the future timeline, I mean. Although it was also good to get full Team Arrow this episode, and lots of Oliver being the hero. Because I miss that too. I really want them to focus on Oliver really being the Green Arrow and the hero, because that the show's supposed to be all about him. And it's really, over the years, has really turned into a team show. And I just love it. As I've said a couple of times, I love the pride that I feel and the joy in seeing Oliver get to be Oliver and really kick some butt and you know, take names and ask questions later. I enjoy that. So I guess for this episode, no, I didn't miss the future timeline, because we got lots of Oliver.
Yeah, I think that was a fair trade-off that we had. And I have posed a whole bunch of questions to you, and I know we've already sort of referenced some of these pop back up in our feedback.
Okay.
So I would love to dive into our feedback for this week's episode.
I think that's a plan. Let's do that. All right, for our transmissions this week, we are going to start it off with Destiny Dazzler, because she was number one in getting feedback to us. She's first. Here she is.
Hi, Arrow Squad. It's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed last week's episode, but I still liked it a lot. It was cool to see Robert Queen in flashbacks again. I thought that was awesome. And I thought it was awesome that Elena is now working with Felicity. Again, I thought that was super cool. I'm interested to see what Emiko's plan is, what she plans to do with those drones. And I thought it was super interesting that she's the leader of the Ninth Circle and not Dante. The other major, major question I have is, Emiko burns the plans for the Queen's Gambit in a flashback. So does that mean that the Ninth Circle orchestrated for the boat to go down? Is that what we're supposed to assume? I don't know. I think the storyline is like super interesting, and I can't wait to see where it goes. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Yeah, Destiny. So you remember Dante hands her that black envelope, and he says, "This is a gift to you from the Circle." And we don't see what it is when she starts to open it, but that's what she has in her hands later in the scene. It was the plans to the Gambit. So that ties back to what I was saying earlier. I really believe that this was a proving mission for her. She had to prove her loyalty and commitment to the Ninth Circle. They gave her the plans, and that was basically, you do this, you're in, kind of thing. So that's my feeling on it. I'd love to see if anyone else has theories about that, but what do you think, Gammy?
I think that by necessity, they do have to tie this back to Merlin, not necessarily to bring him back present day. Most likely, if they did bring him back, it would be a flashback with Emiko and her tie to Merlin. But because we do know that they have written and have established in canon that he is responsible for the sinking of that, I suspect that it's pretty intentional, and they intend to bring him into Emiko's backstory or flashbacks and how he was orchestrating that all along. And because of his ties to the Queen family, and he's almost sort of part of the Queen family, you know, he had a romance with Moira, he's Thea's father, you know, all of that. It definitely would make sense that he's yet another slightly comic book soap opera e piece in the Queen Merlin family drama.
So here's my question for you. Do you think Oliver is going to find out that Emiko was part of that? And that will be the knife that cuts the thread between his bond with her, or his attempts to want to bond with her.
I mean, I'm sure he's going to find out. I don't know if that's going to be the make it or break it piece. I'm not sure that her past could or should be the make it or break it piece, because he's certainly not in a position to judge anybody's past. He's made some pretty questionable choices himself.
No,
I suspect it will be her present day choices, not just the covering up and lying about that, but the fact that she's currently the leader of an organization that wants to kill him, his family, his wife, and his kids, and all of that. That may be the make it or break it piece, but I'll take whatever comes. I'm frankly just happy we have a female villain.
But think of it this way, though. Oliver had nothing to do with what happened to her and her mom, but she had everything to do with what happened to him and his dad ended up dying because of it. So that's what I mean. That could be the point that turns them against her. Like, hey, what? You caused that? You caused my 5 years of hell? You caused me to lose my father? Okay, that's it. I'm taking you out.
Right. Oliver was not to blame for what happened to her mother. What I'm saying about Oliver's past is that he just has a sketchy past. He's kills people. He's got people killed. He's mismanaged money and resources, and people have died. I mean, he's been a hero as well, but he's not a perfect hero by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
And he's also had some long, dark stretches of his past where he wasn't a hero intermittently every other week. So I suspect he would be sympathetic, or at least should be sympathetic, to Emiko's questionable choices that she's had to make because of difficult life situations. And it would be her present and the fact that she's currently partnering and leading people who want to kill him and his family. That's probably going to send him over the edge, but I'll take whatever sends him over the edge. Even if he's being a little hypocritical, he definitely has the right to be under these circumstances.
Yeah, cool.
Our next email comes in from Christy. She says, I was shocked to see that Emiko is the leader of the Ninth Circle and that she had knowledge of the impending sabotage of the Queen's Gambit. Holy cow. That is a payoff 7 years in the making, and it was so worth it. Does this mean Malcolm Merlyn had knowledge of the Ninth Circle back when he had the boat sabotaged? And what do you think about the fact that there hasn't been any mention of Emiko in the future?
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Well, it makes me wonder if she dies, but I also suspect that she's just a side character only here for one season.
Here's a long prediction from me. Oliver kills her.
Ooh. Flash, I really like that, actually.
After how often we see him wanting to save family and redeem family and all of that, this is the one time where he makes the decision to put the death shot to Emiko.
Definitely co-signed on that. Like that. She goes on to say, great opening scene with Oliver and Emiko training together. That is one of the things I miss most about the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
The sequence of events of someone being against the team, joining the team, betraying the team is something we've seen so many times, but I still enjoyed it. And I don't think I ever once considered Emiko to be our big bad for the remainder of the season. So kudos to the writers for surprising me and subverting my expectations. Now thinking back to when she showed up and how I thought she might be a fantastic sidekick for Oliver, this is far more interesting. There you go. There's a very positive take on this from Christy. I like her perspective here. And I have to say, even with some pieces of it possibly having some plot holes, I agree with both Christy and you that there is certainly a way to stitch together the piece that Merlyn was the one tied to the Queen's Gambit as well as Emiko. And I suppose because I was certainly not tied to Dante in any way yet so far, I do not mind Emiko really taking over. I'm just hoping for a little bit clearer writing on that going forward.
Yeah, no, I feel with you. I like how Christy worded it. I can't argue with her or anything, even though my feelings are a bit different. I like how she words it here. And if the writers can turn this around and make her a convincible bad guy for the rest of the season, I'll be totally okay with it, because I like her, I like the character, I like the actress playing it. like I said, she's an equal to Oliver, and I think that is cool because we haven't had that, not since the likes of Malcolm Merlyn, you know, being of similar character type, you know, or with same skill sets, being a convincing equal to Oliver. So I like all of that. They just failed in their presentation of this episode. So let's hope that they can convince us from here on forward. Next up is, I'm just here for Felicity. And she says, I love the opening with Felicity and Elena. Sassy Laurel is Laurel we all want and love. I agree, Felicity, just because Emiko killed Diaz, it doesn't make her bad. Ha. Dinah, stop trying to push the redeem Laurel plot. Let her be her chaotic evil self. Dinah looks so good in her canary suit. Wink. Yes, I agree with you there. Shouldn't Felicity have been asking why Archer crashed instead of shrugging it off so easily? Yeah, I think so. If you want me to ship Emiko and Renee, show I'll pass. Pute to Laurel, upset over Quentin. You know, I don't see Renee and Emiko being a romantic thing. I think we see her slowly swinging him over to the wrong side, possibly. Oh, that was an awesome arrow catch and spin by Emiko in the cave, and I love she doesn't run to Oliver so easily. That was a nice twist on my expectations for them to have him to rescue her, as it were. Yeah, I agree with all that, too. Renee just stopping talking forever. Yay for Dinah bringing up Finny. Also, you are Black Siren, Laurel, so of course we see you as that. Wow, can Robert be suckier this episode? Yeah, you know, we didn't really talk about that. They really made Robert Queen look like a douche. You say Emiko is a bad guy, writers, but you have her kill Diaz and shoot at Renee, so how bad is she really? Okay, maybe it's just me, but I don't like how they're trying to tie Emiko into everything by suggesting she bomb the Queen's Gambit. I understand it helps tie up the series in a sense, but couldn't that have just been a fortunate accident for her instead of a manufactured accident by her? I'm definitely interested to hear what fans think about this end portion. Good episode overall. Yeah, see, that's what I'm wondering, is if that's what the feeling is going to generally be. We'll have to see how the rest of the feedback goes, but some people I think are enjoying the shock. Some people are kind of like, I don't know about this rewriting the history or adding more to the history. Do we have to do that? We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think set this in a different season and this would have been a much stronger storyline for sure. Mm-hmm. My one little comment there is I absolutely think that they are trying to make Renee and Emiko a ship. I think that they have gone to great lengths to try to get Renee romantically connected to the Queen family, originally with Thea and now with Emiko. And I absolutely don't like either one of those two options, but more power to them.
Well, we'll see. All right, on to Comic Geek Kev. What does he have to say?
Comic Geek Kev writes in. He says, hey squad, so after multiple twists and turns, we found out Emiko is in charge of the Ninth Circle, and I guess I'm not surprised. To have a character come into Oliver's life like she did and have it be a positive would be way too simple. Everybody seems to be a turncoat. And it seems she was responsible for the destruction of the Queen's Gambit, not just resulting in the death of Robert, but in creating Green Arrow. And now that is a pretty amazing reveal. Looks like Laurel, too, is heading back towards the dark side. I'd love it if they would make up their minds about this character. It's getting a bit odd. I don't know if it's been decided, if she's part of the final season, or if it's going to come to a resolution at the end of this season, but it's time to pick a lane and stick to it. It's going to break Felicity's heart, but enough is enough. Obviously, there was no flash forward, boo, but the thought crossed my mind that Mia is under the impression that vigilantes caused all the problem with Star City in the future, and it seems more likely that it's Archer, and therefore Felicity, causing it. Maybe Elena does something to Archer, or maybe it just goes to Skynet on its own. But it doesn't seem like that vigilantes are the issue. Also, why does the rest of the team wear masks but not Oliver? Haven't they all been exposed? Or is it just the SCPD that knows who they are? That's a good question. We talked about that a little bit last week why they wear masks. And really, I think it's just to fit the vibe and to be cool. And I think the coolest look that they ever had on the show was back when Oliver still used paint instead of a mask. But that's just me. But I think that the reason they're doing something akin to a mask or a version of a mask, or some of them have helmets or whatever, is just to fit the comic book vibe. It's a plot hole, but it's a plot hole in the same way that Supergirl puts on glasses and is no longer recognizable as Supergirl. It's, you know, it's just, it's hand wavy. Superman, it's his both premise, really. So yeah. Supergirl is unfortunately stuck with that as well. She goes on to say, the fight scenes still beat everyone else on TV today. I hope whomever choreographs these goes on to another show after, so we can continue to see these incredible scenes. Another great episode. I give it an 8.5. Sarin Gastrones that got away. Can't wait for the podcast. Well, thank you for shout out as well there at the end, Kev. And I think I said she goes on to say several times when this was Kevin's post. So sorry for getting the wrong pronouns in there. My bad. And I definitely agree with that boo there in the middle about the flash forwards. I didn't really mention that earlier, but I definitely missed the flash forwards in this week's episode.
Yeah, we can't really argue with his thoughts about Laurel and the back and forth with her. That's just like, yeah, enough is enough. But I like that he liked the reveal that Emiko could be involved in the cause of Oliver becoming Green Arrow. I mean, that really brings, like I was saying earlier, the whole story full circle. And it's, although the previous feedbacker was saying they don't like how they're shoehorning Emiko into everything this late in the game. And I also agree with that. So, yeah. But thank you, as always, Kev. Next up is an email from Montefescu, and let's see where he lands this time. He says, hello, Air Squad. Monty with a question here. Man, this one. Black Siren gets an Emiko scratch. Granted, Laurel was kind of portrayed as clumsy in the way she tails Emiko, but when we combine who arranges Ricardo Diaz's marshmallow send-off and the other Emiko data points with her warning to Oliver, it won't be hard for the audience to figure out that it is not Dante who runs a terrorist operation, the Ninth Circle, or even who blows up and sinks the Queen's Gambit at the end when we're only about a quarter way through the episode. Average writing, average script, average direction, average acting yields 3.33 out of scores of 5. Now that we have that out of the way, let us discuss why I'm being generous with the praise and the rating. Why is it whenever Team Arrow hires a Gomer, whether it is the murderous Black Siren, or in this episode via Felicity, the new schlub Elena, who can be tracked back to Kate and James, yet another in a long line, season 5 no less, of idiots who want to blow up Star City with an H-bomb, we get another laydown for another lame bomb plot storyline. What is it with Seattle and H-bombs anyway? Does Mark Guggenheim have a fetish? At least with Emiko, the Emiko storyline, and that is why I give it more praise than it probably deserves. It is more of a Japanese, I don't know if I can pronounce this right, Om Shinrikyo kind of ripoff plot, complete with the sarin nerve gas included. That shows some originality Arrow style. Anybody want to predict when Oliver gets a clue that Emiko is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs? Monty. Yeah.
I just want to clarify that Mark Guggenheim is not the creative control on Arrow right now. Not he anymore, hasn't been this season. Yeah.
You're right.
That's all. I can't speak to his fetishes. I suspect that writing a bomb plot into a storyline is not, in fact, a fetish, but I can confirm that he is not the creative control of the season. That's all.
Yeah. And that's the one point I can kind of agree with him here, though, is that yet again, another bomb the city plot. If you really think about it, we've dealt with that quite a few times over the course of Arrow and its many seasons. It's so I guess you could feel a little bit tired of that idea. And yet again, going to destroy the city with a bomb. And yeah, I guess it's a tired idea.
It's a pretty efficient way to destroy a city.
It is. But it's not the only storyline we have to have in a superhero TV show either. So I can kind of feel his frustration in that sense for sure.
Yeah. I would be interested to hear all the multiple ways that Star City could be destroyed.
All right. Well, Erin actually sent us a little something extra here at the end. What did she send us?
I'm just clarifying that this is a different Erin.
Oh.
And this Erin, he has written in to share with us an article from denofgeek.com.
Okay.
That had to do with why Arrowverse needs to defeat the big bad once and for all, which is something we brought up a little bit earlier. He says, I don't fully agree with them, but maybe that's because I'm coming from Supergirl mainly, where most of our bad guys are hits. But still, there's nothing wrong with a season-long villain as well as they're well done, like Prometheus or Malcolm originally. It would be interesting to see the prod approach, as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. calls just for a refresher after a huge big bad who really messed up the team, the season four, or a season where there's a question posed about the way the heroes feel, and it's executed via recurring villains instead of one big bad. But I don't think a big bad should stop existing, as it's comics inspired, and sometimes you have those issues. What do you two think about this concept? And also, I say to the part about journeying through the multiverse, give them time, as that's probably going to be the future crossover plot. Well, first of all, thank you, Erin, for sharing this article. I found it really interesting, and I definitely agree with you, not necessarily the article, that it can kind of go either way, and it's really more so tied to how one resolves a season rather than how one resolves a big bad. You can have unhappy endings to a season, right? Where it's not even a cliffhanger with the villain still alive. It's just that the villain won, right? You could have an unhappy ending to a story, and that can be really well done and dark. And it's not common for comic books, and it's important that we understand that with comic books and stories about superheroes, we want to escape from reality. And so when reality is boring or lackluster, we want these high highs and these low lows. But if reality is, as it is right now, often wrought with lots of war and death and terrible things in real life, we are often particularly drawn to superhero stories that do have a happy ending, and those are more common in times like this. And I think there's certainly a place for Arrow to resolve without just trying to subvert a happy ending with something cliffhangery or mysterious or just going basic and killing Oliver in the end. There's a place, I think, for this show to have a happy ending where a big bad is defeated once and for all, with the understanding that it's a superhero show and it's fictitious and it doesn't have to match real life, because if it did, then why would we be watching it? So that's my take on this article. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, and just to pull back on what they were saying about the big bad, where they need a big bad for the season or for per episode kind of thing. You have to look at the history of Arrow, and when Arrow was at its strongest, it had a season long villain, a bad guy. You look at Slade, you look at Malcolm Merlyn, you look at even Ra's al Ghul. That was a season long story arc that dealt with a big bad. And by the end of it, either the big bad got defeated or, you know, somebody died kind of thing. So I like that idea of having a season-long big bad that is executed properly. Like, it always depends on the execution and the writing around it. Early seasons, we had that. And then you see what Arrow did later on when they had big bads that didn't necessarily work, like Damian Dark, who got moved on to other TV shows. Or you got seasons that are split in half with villains only being half a season long, like Kate and James, giving rise to Diaz. And what does Diaz do? Diaz actually doesn't get dealt with by the end of the season. He carries on in the next season, which we now know was a fail. But then we had Prometheus, which was mostly season long, and it was fantastic again. So I think it depends on the writing and what they're going to do with it and how well they execute it. I, for one, because like you mentioned with the comic books, I mean, that's the whole idea in comics. It's a good guy versus a bad guy. And usually in the end, the good guy wins, defeats the bad guy, or the good guy dies. It's usually one of two endings overall on the grand scheme of things. So the TV show's kind of got to follow that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that they have a lot of wiggle room to go whichever direction or tone that they want, certainly after this many seasons. And I'm just kind of interested to see what the ending is. I know there's been a lot of prediction that it will be Oliver dying. And I, you know, the show's made it very clear that they're not following the comic books directly. They're doing their own version, their own incarnation. And it's often, frankly, much better than the comic books. But there are still some elements of comic book tone that are kind of fun to have worked into here as an example of that. But if you are curious about that article, I can post that on our Facebook page. You guys can go check it out and let me know what you think in the comments.
Sounds good.
And our next email is from Carrie Johnson. How about you take this one, Flash?
Yep. I love reading Carrie. He says, so here's what I liked. Although Emiko simply appeared to be someone navigating her way through daddy issues, it was a nice reveal to see that she hasn't just remained merely a pawn for Dante. She has, in fact, risen to lead the Ninth Circle, which seems right for someone who shares Queen DNA. They are leaders. I'm also glad that she's ditched the Green Arrow gear and is rocking her Ninth Circle garb. Yeah, she did look cool. I'll give her that. She had a really neat looking red and black leather motif going there. It was also pretty cool to see that she had a role in the sinking of the Queen's Gambit. It just continues to add layers to a show with rich history. In critical ways, Oliver and Emiko have both been damaged by their father. Robert Queen created the rage and loss that rests within Emiko, and Emiko triggered the circumstances that led Robert Queen to kill himself shortly after tasking Oliver with righting his wrongs. While Oliver is intent on saving slash redeeming Emiko, which would correct his father's greatest wrong, I would rather Emiko remain beyond redemption, allowing Oliver to realize there are limits to redemption. I also like that the show keeps creating layers of storytelling surrounding the Archer program. Elena's return gives Felicity someone with which to exchange brainy banter. I might be the only one, but I still don't trust Elena. Actually, I'm still with you there a little bit. There's something about her I'm not quite sure I can put my finger on yet, but I'm with you there. It'll also be interesting to see what moves Emiko and the Ninth Circle try to make on the Archer program now that she has gotten a look at it. This whole thing feels like Skynet to me. I love the constant Terminator references. Skynet is the ultimate computer going bad storyline. Anyway, here's what bothered me a bit. Not so much about the episode, but the conceit of superhero shows in general, which is hooded slash faceless villain fighters who are terrible at fighting. We've heard how dangerous the Ninth Circle is. However, it's impossible to overlook just how inept the hooded members of the Ninth Circle appeared to be during the fight scenes. I just imagine they grabbed leftover henchmen from the woefully inept League of Shadows and Argus to rout out this terrible band of Ninth Circle fighters. Speaking of Emiko creating things, I also like that she may have provided the spark necessary to send Black Siren on a more clear narrative path by perhaps taking away her ability to be the DA. I think it's critical for Arrow to definitively determine who Black Siren will be and what she's about. I would prefer that she leave Star City DA's office behind and fully commit to being an anti-hero with clear motivations. She could do that for a time until the prosecutor's office in Gotham City asks her to transfer there. I'd love to see that character on Batwoman. Anyway, it was kind of a muted episode, but I do like the stories that were set up as we head into the homestretch. And as far as the episode title, Inheritance. Emiko inherited rage, Oliver inherited optimism, Black Siren inherited doubt, Felicity inherited her daddy's brains for the Archer program, Diggle inherited wisdom, which he keeps sharing with Oliver, Dinah inherited an unhinged doppelganger, DA, Renee inherited just enough goodwill from Emiko that she didn't kill him. See you next week. Great way to round it off.
I love that summary there at the end. That's fantastic. Carrie's feedback is always so on point. Just always the best. We are very lucky to have his thoughts here as well. The next one we got in not in the middle of the episode this week. We got it a little bit in advance from Miss Kate Johnson. She writes in and says, hey guys, I just wanted to say thank you for throwing my feedback in last week. I really appreciate it. Well, we appreciate your feedback, Kate.
Anytime.
She also says, I just want to be Stormy's friend because every time I feel like I leave something out of my feedback, she says exactly what I want to say. Well, Kate, I can introduce you guys on Twitter if you like. I believe I have both of you as friends of mine on Twitter, so make sure you get a chance to meet. So aside from that, I enjoyed this week's episode for what it was, but I wasn't very invested in the major storyline, and I found it kind of predictable for me. It was the least interesting episode of the season. She gives it a 6 out of 10. That's close to my rating as well. Mm-hmm. She says, for the most part, I wasn't surprised by the Emiko storylines. I had 2 guesses for what her plans were, and one was dead on. Any details or surprises that came up, I was able to see coming based on earlier scenes, and even the jamming of Archer wasn't subtle. That being said, there were some nice elements. I really loved that the team talked out the Emiko situation somewhat civilly without playing the blame game or starting a screaming match. As tense as it should be, but nobody let their frustration with Emiko cloud their view of the team.
Yeah.
Growth is important, so I'm glad everyone has finally grown past that annoying trope. I was also happy to see the Black Siren scene with Oliver. I loved that he was obviously making an effort because of her friendship with Felicity, but he still doesn't trust her. And it also makes me laugh that in season 1, it was supposed to be Oliver and Laurel, but as most characters fall for Felicity, that is her most important relationship at the moment. Yes, that's so cute.
That's so true.
Yes. It's almost like the writers are trying to bridge some gap between the two sides of the fandom. Other than that, I loved Felicity, and Elena's return. That's about it. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't good. Well, Kate, you and I seem to agree on quite a lot, and this week is no exception. So I'm happy I got a chance to go through your feedback.
I love the connections she just made. That is actually really cool. I'm surprised I didn't get slapped over the head with that already. Yeah, that the connections between old Laurel and Oliver and now Felicity and the new Laurel too, and just this, it's not even a love triangle. It's some kind of weird love hexagon. I don't know what's going on. It's, but that's cool. That is so cool to kind of piece that all together. It's all connecting the dots in a funny way. Awesome mm-hmm. stuff, Kate. All right, next up we got an email from Stormy Woods. And Stormy, who could be your new friend, Kate? Stormy says, I'll give this episode 6.5 out of 10. While there were a few bright spots, I overall didn't like this episode. Let me get to my positives first. Felicity continuing to build her company and the scenes with Elena. Oliver and Felicity scenes were great, and you can see what a supportive marriage they have. Diggs scenes with Oliver trying to get through to him regarding Emiko. I even like the scene of Siren being outed as working with Diaz. By doing that, she has made Earth One Laurel look like a dirty district attorney, so she wouldn't be able to hide in her life anymore. I see the storyline for Siren going one of three ways. One, she goes back to evil. Two, she faces her crimes, which are plenty, and faces the consequences. Or, three, she goes off somewhere, possibly another Earth or time period. Sarah is coming back for next week's episode, and her having a time ship could help with the third option. Cool. Now, let me get to what I didn't like with this episode, and that's Emiko. Sounds like Stormy might be with me here a little bit. Did we seriously need another female villain motivated by daddy issues? We already have that with Siren. Robert Queen was a spineless, weak man, and he screwed over all three of his children. I'm really tired of Oliver having to atone for his father because it shouldn't be his burden to bear. Robert blaming Moira for his walking out on Emiko. No, sir, that's on you. Let's not forget he was going to abandon Oliver and Thea for another of his mistresses. Maybe if Emiko really wanted to know her brother, she could hear that having Robert as a dad wasn't great for him either. Instead, she's taking all of her daddy issues on Oliver, and I find that pathetic. If I'm being honest, I think some of her story has been copied from Thea and given to Emiko. Thea had daddy issues also, and she too was trained by a villain. The difference is I had reason to care about Thea. The meeting adult Emiko had with Robert about wanting to join his company was her last chance to have a relationship with him. If he had given in and hired her, she would have told him about the plans to blow up the Gambit. When Robert didn't hire her and really built more resentment to Oliver, saying it was his to inherit, she was fine to let them die. Therefore, Emiko bears some responsibility for the hell Oliver went through on Leanne Yu. She's also the leader of the Ninth Circle and is targeting Archer to steal it. My guess is when Renee says Archer fell into wrong hands, it's Emiko with him possibly helping her. They have to give a reason why Renee is in so deep in the future with Eden Corps, and I bet it's because of Emiko. I did love Dig comparing Emiko to Andy, and I couldn't agree more. Both of them willingly committed evil acts, but they want to blame their choices on others. Maybe Oliver will have to make the choice Dig did in that he has to kill Emiko to save his family. Oh, Stormy, you and me are so in tune this week. I love it. She goes on. One interesting note from the flash forward episode, when Connor shows his Night's Watch badge and ID, the background on the ID is the Spartan helmet. That reaffirms my belief that Diggle has possibly Lila start Night's Watch as a good version of Argus. Prediction for the rest of the season, Renee dies in the flash forward, possibly to atone for his involvement with Eden Corps. P.S. I think Malcolm was involved with the Ninth Circle. He probably went to them for help with silencing Robert. In the comics, Robert, Malcolm, Moira, and Emiko were all members of the Ninth Circle. Someone mentioned it on Twitter that it could be why William and Mia don't go by Queen. Could there be a rule that a queen has to be involved in the Ninth Circle? Wow, Stormy, you are like the genius of feedbackers this week. You have brought out such amazing points that are so on point. This is fantastic stuff. What amazing predictions and ideas. And I absolutely agree with all of your thoughts because they're right in tune with absolutely everything I was thinking and feeling. And you explained it in different words than I did, and it goes hand in hand with what I said. I gave it a 7, you gave it a 6, but I think we're pretty close. That's the awesome feedback, Stormy. Love it.
The thing that I like about Stormy's feedback every week, and also I see some of her posts on social media, is she's always has this perfect balance of being super aware of the comic book content, you know, what she brought in there at the end with mm-hmm. her prediction of the potential rules that could be in place with the Ninth Circle is tied to some elements with the Ninth Circle in the comics. She's always very aware of that, but very supportive of the show taking its own incarnation of that, and that some of the elements that she consistently likes best about the show are the elements that it have differed from the comic book. So there's this such a broad awareness of the universe as a whole that she brings to it, which makes her feedback really complex and fun. And yeah, Stormy's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I totally appreciate everything she says all the time, but I just especially enjoy it when me and her are in line with each other, because everything she says just feeds fuel to the fire that I already have, and I just love it. I'm like, yes, Stormy said it better than I did. Yes, she agrees with me. Yes, she's explaining it better than I did. That's cool. It's just fun, Stormy, so I much appreciate that. There's one little thing here at the end. I got an email notification from a friend we haven't heard from in a long time, Bianca the Huntress, but it came in blank. And I wanted to ask you, Cammy, if you got anything more than I did. It said an email, but there was nothing there.
Yeah, I got the same thing. It shows that Bianca the Huntress sent in some feedback to Golden Spiral Media, which should come directly to us. And I know we've commented that at the beginning of this season, there were some issues with the platform where we weren't getting all the feedback directly to us. But in this case, we did get the feedback. It was just blank. So it's possible we're running into some feedback issues again. So sort of two things here with this. Bianca, please feel free to send any feedback to us directly. If there's anything that you're running into with the site, giving you errors, anything like that, we are super happy to receive that directly. Both Flash and I, you can send it to us on Facebook. I also have my direct messages open on Twitter, and you can send me as long a feedback as you want on there. And I'm also happy to send out my email that I know some others will send me their feedback directly. So you're welcome to do that.
Yep.
So that's the first part. Secondly, if you ever have sent any feedback and we haven't read through it, just know that we are not skipping your feedback. Occasionally we'll summarize bits and pieces, but we always read a bit or here or there of everything. So if we've ever skipped it, it's because we haven't received it. For that, deeply apologize, first of all. And again, if it's consistently happening, or if it's even just happened once, it makes absolutely no difference to me how the feedback's sent in. Any way you want to get your thoughts to me, I guarantee I'm still checking my email mid-episode and we'll get it onto here. So that's all.
Yeah, exactly. So just in case you guys don't have our personal connections. You can find our Twitter links and all that stuff at the website. But my email, I'll give it to you guys right here. It is cybertiger17@gmail.com. So that's cybertiger17@gmail.com. Send me your feedback there if you guys find you're having trouble. I know a couple of you do, and I get doubles of it, and it's all right. It's okay, because it makes sure we get it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Next week's episode is not going to happen. We're going on hiatus. I'm so sad about that. But the next episode that we will have is Monday, April 15th, which I believe is tax day here in the States. And it is entitled Lost Canary. That's episode 18.
Yeah.
We're nearing the end. Gosh.
Is that like April 15th, roughly, when it comes back? That's the date?
Yes, April 15th is when it comes back. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a couple weeks off, guys. It's gonna feel like a long stint of time. But as I said in the opening, Legends of Tomorrow comes back. So if you want to join me and Jess over there, we'll be back this week. Or, yeah, we're doing a little comeback episode this week in time for next week. So look up Tomorrow's Legends. Facebook, Twitter, website, whatever way you'll find us there. We'll talk some Legends. And I also want to put in something, too. If you guys just want to join me on my own show, Cybercast, I'd love to hear from some of you guys there. I know a lot of you followed me over there. I'd love to have some more. That's just a little personal plug here, the show where we talk about things we're passionate about. Come find me over at Cybercast, and we'll talk about all kinds of nerdy things.
And if you want to find any more Arrow Squad bits and pieces in past episodes, you can go to arrowsquad.com. You can also find Martin and myself on Twitter or any other social media and come chat with us about Arrow.
Totally. Well, Cammy, we'll be in touch over the hiatus, but you have a good couple weeks off, and let's go for this a final run. Hopefully it's an exciting run to the finish.
Mm-hmm. I am excited.
All right, guys. Thanks for being with us. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.